Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
So yesterday, I don't know, about 2 o'clock, I'm walking the dog, I'm walking Chessie, and somebody in a car that actually looks like he stole it off a lot, it's just like the oldest car I've ever seen, turns around a big sweeping turn, and I look, it's Neville! It's Neville!
Oh, okay, yeah.
It's Neville! And so we start to talk.
Not that old, by the way.
Well, it doesn't look good. He's got a new car.
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
All right, for those of you who care, we are still at Uncle Benny's table. Michael is socially distanced at 6 feet away from me at Uncle Benny's table, and we are going to do a loaded guest show today. Just in terms of news, Karen Johnson, who Jason LaCanfora talked about the other day, who was in Romania playing basketball with his pregnant wife and could not get back to the United States, is back. According to Yahoo Sports, he is back. That is something that everybody, I'm sure, in the family feels good about. Steve Sands joins us now, and there is going to be live golf. It's not going to have I shouldn't even say what it's not going to have. I'll ask Steve all about this. It is the Colonial. It is in Fort Worth, Texas. It is an old, old tournament that people love and respect. If I'm not mistaken, Annika Sorenstam played in it. Right, Steve? Didn't Annika Sorenstam play that one tournament and then not play against men anymore and prove that she could do pretty well? Am I right on that about 10, 12 years ago?
Yes, exactly right.
Yeah, I remember that. So anyway, so it's going to be a great field. First, let's discuss, what are they going to do? A, are there going to be fans? B, are players going to be tested? C, is there anything sort of extraordinary in the coverage that makes it different than what you're used to?
Oh, yeah, it's going to be a lot different. No fans, no hospitality tents, so you won't see the grandstands and you won't see those hospitality tents around the fairways and greens that you normally would see in tee boxes. With people clinking glasses, having fun, and drinking and eating and just watching the greatest players in the world play golf. So that's the first thing you'll notice is the silence and the lack of grandstands when you're watching on TV beginning tomorrow. The other thing is the players have been tested the last couple of days. There have been no withdrawals. That's significant, Tony, which means no one has tested positive. On the PGA Tour at Colonial or in Ponte Vedra Beach, Florida, at the Corn Ferry Tour. So no withdrawals the last 2 days, which means nobody, neither a caddy nor a player, has tested positive. It's going to look and feel different. I think people are going to watch sports with no fans. Unlike NASCAR, Tony, where you hear the roar of the engines going around the track, in golf, there will be no palpable noise or buzz or commotion or people walking around. It'll look a lot different beginning tomorrow.
So there will be caddies. Will they be able to remove the flag sticks? Will they be able to hand a club to their player?
Yes, they will. There'll be social distancing, and that is a very important message the PGA Tour wants to convey to the audience, that you can play the game and also do it in a responsible, safe way in the times we're in with social distancing. They will be able to touch flag sticks, unlike what we saw at the two exhibition matches a couple of weeks ago at Seminole and the Medalist. The guys will be able to touch the flag sticks and rakes. There won't be as many rakes on the golf course, but that part of the game you won't notice. That part of the game will be the same, except for when you see those scenes in golf where they're waiting on a tee box or where they're waiting around a green, you just won't see the guys standing so close to one another.
Here's what you often see. A player lines up a putt. A caddy is right behind him. A caddy lines up a putt. They're very physically close, often hand on shoulder, often, but I know they won't do that now. Will we see that?
No, you're supposed to stay 6 feet away. Now, I think that instinctively, I think people almost with muscle memory will go into their normal routine, even though they haven't played competitively in 13 weeks. The guys still have their same routine that they've always gone through all these years, especially guys who have caddies who have worked together forever and ever. So say take James Edmondson as the caddy. He's been a club champion at Colonial for years, multiple times. His boss, Ryan Palmer, is a member at Colonial. Those two have been going around that golf course, Tony, together as best friends and caddies and player relationship for years all right. over the world, but especially there in Fort Worth at Colonial. It's going to be an odd thing for them, but they're going to try their best to, again, convey that message to the world that let's play this game, let's play it responsibly, and keep our social distancing. But there are going to be a couple of missteps where people kind of chuckle a little bit, where they get too close to one another and they have to kind of back away. There's no doubt about that.
When you read about and listen to commentary on the NBA, they talk about everybody being in a bubble. Everybody going right. to Orlando. Nobody leaving the bubble. Once you get in, you cannot leave. Golf is a game of individuals, not teams. Is there a bubble for golfers?
Man, I was listening to you talk to Wilbon the other day about, is he going to be coming to Orlando for a month? How's that sound in July and August for Wilbon to be sitting in the sweltering heat of Central Florida for more than a month? Look, the bubble is different in the NBA, what they're trying to do in Major League Baseball, what they're going to do as well in the NHL. It's very simple. When an NBA team travels to Orlando and then they get into a hotel, that's the lockdown. Then they go to and from the arena at Walt Disney World, and that's it. Golf is so different, Tony. You and Michael know this. It's 148 players this week with 148 caddies. They're officials. They're people from the tour. They're people from the event. And they're all individuals. They don't work for anyone other than themselves. So there are multiple hotels. You can't really legislate whether or not the guys go out to dinner, grab a sub and bring it back to their room, have takeout, or have it delivered. You can't really legislate that. So the bubble that the PGA Tour is trying to put together is not nearly as tight as it would be in team sports, where there's a collective bargaining agreement and players all travel with each other as opposed to individually. It's a more challenging sport logistically in that regard, but it is the least challenging once the competition is going on inside the ropes. You're not hand checking and boxing out.
That's right.
And getting, you know, tackles and guards right there spitting all over each other, that kind of thing, and checking each other into the board. So what you gain in the competition, you lose in that bubble sense when they're away from the golf course.
Is there a plan? You talk to people in golf all the time, and when I say a plan, I just mean it in the loosest sense. Is there anything that they're aiming for in terms of bringing back fans? Or are they just saying, no, we're not going to even think about that yet?
Yeah, they're doing it in blocks, Tony. So unfortunately, with the no fans being allowed in certain places, you're seeing a schedule kind of piecemeal together because some events are being canceled. The John Deere Classic in Illinois had to be canceled because they just couldn't make it without fans. So they're doing it in four tournament block. So you have this week at the Colonial, no fans, and then no fans all the way through Hilton Head next week, and then Hartford the following week, and then outside Detroit at the Rocket Mortgage will be the fourth event. Then they go to Columbus, Ohio for 2 weeks in a row. That's the John Deere was canceled. They replaced that event with an event at Jack Nicklaus's Muirfield Village in Dublin, Ohio, just outside Columbus. That first week they'll be playing there is going to be sponsored by Workday, no fans. But then at Jack's event, they're going to be upwards of 8,000 fans a day. Mike DeWine, the governor of Ohio, is allowing fans to be played that week. So 5 weeks from now, you'll see fans at a PGA Tour event as it's scheduled right now. Just, you know, who knows what's going to happen in the next 5 weeks. But right now, 5 weeks from now, at the Memorial, Jack Nicklaus's event, which will have everybody playing. The field will be stacked that week at Jack's place. There will be upwards of 8,000 fans per day that week.
There's the field here. You've got the top five. You got eight of the top 10. Two of the top 10 who are not there. It's because I think they are European and it's hard to you know, negotiate the travel. You don't have Tiger, but you got almost everybody else, right?
Yes. I mean, the guys, as you can imagine, Tony, are jonesing to compete, and everybody's ready to go. I was a little surprised that Tiger didn't play this week.
Yeah, me
too. I don't know if it's a health issue. I have no idea what the deal is, but you would think. Remember, you know, when the Players was called on that Thursday night after the first round 13 weeks ago, Tiger hadn't played for a month before that, almost a month and a half before that, at Torrey Pines outside San Diego. So it's been a long time since Tiger's competed on the PGA Tour. But everybody's there outside of those guys you said with travel issues and Tiger this week. And I think the fields are going to be really, really strong the next 2 or 3 weeks. There might be a little bit of a lull there with Detroit. And then when they go to Columbus, unless he's not healthy and unless there are still travel restrictions, I literally think you could see like perhaps – every single person in the top 30 or top 40 play in Jack's Memorial. I think that they not only want to kiss the ring of Jack Nicklaus, but it's just such a great golf course. It's a great tournament, and it's perfectly timed a couple of weeks before the first major championship, which is scheduled in San Francisco at Harding Park, the PGA Championship in August.
Will the Players, you know, be mic'd up for this event? Is this an event where everyone will be mic'd or certain players will be mic'd, not necessarily to have dialogue with you because they won't have earpieces, but will they be mic'd up so that down the road we can hear what they say?
Yeah, this has been a big push from TV partners and the PGA Tour for a couple of years now. And yes is the answer. I believe Ricky Fowler will be mic'd up tomorrow. I saw you and Wilbon going back and forth on.
Yeah, I'm not crazy about it. I like the dialogue. I like you can ask them a question. I like that.
Well, exactly, of course. So what we have, it's just my opinion. I mean, what do I know? I'm not in these meetings. These are high-level executive meetings. I would forego the mic'd up player situation because we have what's called parab mics. These mics are so good now that our audio guys get right in there on fairways and greens, and you can hear the conversations anyway. So I would rather be able to walk and talk with them, say, once a round from like the seventh tee to the second shot at seven. If it's a par five that's reachable where you know the guys are going to be waiting anyway and you have 90 seconds to be able to chat with them. Not really late in the round where we bother them, but maybe somewhere in the middle of the round to get a little inside access inside the ropes. Miking guys on the PGA Tour is not going to be as exciting as people think it will be, especially following Barkley in the booth. Peyton Manning is an all-time great communicator in sports. Brady, Phil, Tiger, the dynamic of Barkley and Manning going back and forth, you're not going to be able to put an earpiece in a player when he's playing a PGA Tour event. That's just ridiculous because he's competing for his livelihood. But I'm with you. The mic'd up thing doesn't really jack me up at all. I would rather be able to just kind of hear from them, you know, throughout a course of a 60-second perhaps conversation as they're walking from one shot to the next somewhere in the middle of the round. But, yeah, I think it's Fowler tomorrow, maybe one or two other guys. So that part of the telecast will be interesting to watch as well.
Well, I would also think if I were the president of the PGA Tour, I would want to protect my players. I would want to review what is heard over the air. I'd want to make sure there was nothing particularly controversial, nobody cursing. You know, I'd run it by my players because if only a few of them agree to do it and they get embarrassed by it, that's a bad circumstance.
Yeah, I totally agree. I was asked about this about, I don't know, like 18 months ago, maybe 2 years ago. And I said the only way you could possibly do it on the PGA Tour to, A, get a little bit of material for fans who are watching on TV to be able to get a little more inside the ropes than they are, obviously, when they're watching from their couch or their lazy boy, is – I think like the NBA does it is pretty good. You have the coaches who are mic'd, and then you go to commercial break, and then you come out of commercial, whether it's on ESPN or whether it's on TNT, when they come out of commercial, they kind of go back and hear the conversation. That way, the coach in this case, or the player on the PGA Tour, is protected. So it's not live, which is obviously not as great. I mean, you don't want it on tape, but if you do it live, Tony, you run the risk of really exposing a player and a caddy.
That's what I think.
From having a conversation. I mean, like in golf, and you know this, Tony, and Michael knows this, and I think people who are listening to your show know this as well. There's so much time in between shots in golf. One of the beauties of golf and the beauty of the caddy relationship with the player is the caddy is almost a mini sports psychologist as he or she's walking around the golf course with their boss, because you're trying to keep your player loose. You're trying to keep your player engaged as well. So whether they're having a conversation about the Caps making a Stanley Cup run, or they're having a conversation about one or two players who they're playing with, say the guy is slow and the guy is cursing at his caddy about how slow the other player in his group is, you can't have that on television. That's not fair to expose the player and the caddy like that. So it's a very, very tricky spot for television to have these guys mic'd up.
Okay. All right, listen, I'm happy that there's going to be live golf. I hope people watch. I know you're excited about it, and we will talk to you soon.
All right, Tony, be good. Good to talk to you.
Steve Sands, boys and girls, very, very wonderful. We will take a break. We will come back. Chuck Todd, when we come back, yes?
That's right.
Chuck Todd, when we come back? All right, good. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Vincero ad. We are partnering with Vincero Watches once more, and we're excited to have them as a sponsor. Now that Father's Day is coming up, we figure it's high time to get our favorite dads, grandpas, bros, uncles in on Vincero. After all, what's a better gift than something that will stand the test of time? Watches make a great gift for everyone, especially those who are hard to shop for. Go check out their watches at VinceroWatches.com/Tony. It's a gift that means something, and with custom engraving. Ooh, I didn't know about that.
That must be new.
Yeah, you can make the gift even more personal. Check out all their new styles and colorways and take advantage of their site-wide sale. Vincero watches are stunning and well under $200. We're big fans of this brand, and we continue to wear their watches around. Let me just say this, okay, because now I read that copy. I have a Vincero watch. I wore it last night on the PTI show, if anybody looked. It's got a dark face to it and copper. The numbers are in copper. I really like it. Michael, which do you have?
I've tried something new. I got the blue-faced watch, Chrono S blue-brown.
I really like it. They're delivering all orders on time, no delays. Take advantage of their sale with discounts on everything site-wide. None of their new items are off-limits, and they have brand-new watch collections you need to see for yourself online right now. Visit VinceroWatches.com/Tony. And when you purchase, the discount is automatically applied at checkout. So you don't even have to use the code. That's great. It's easy to shop Vincero. Do not leave your gift shopping until the last minute. Visit VinceroWatches.com/Tony. And this is the Italian pronunciation, V-I-N-C-E-R-O, Vincero.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
One, two, three.
This is a song called Tokyo Girl. It's by an artist named Val McCallum. Maybe you know his father. His father was David McCallum, the British actor who was in The Man from U.N.C.L.E. And was in the movie The Great Escape. His mother is Jill Ireland, who was an actress and a model and was in movies with Charles Bronson. Why are we playing this? It was sent to us by Michael Granberry, who's the arts and feature writer at the Dallas Morning News, who sends us stuff here and there. Val McCallum tours with Jackson Browne. He's his guitar player. He tours with Bonnie Raitt. And these are his own songs. This is like the closest we're getting to stardom, kids. And this is really, this makes me very, very happy. Very happy. This song is called Tokyo Girl. We have another song later, Nigel?
That's right. We definitely do.
Okay. You know, that's really cool. Chuck Todd joins us. He doesn't have to do Meet the Press at this hour. He doesn't even have to do Meet the Press on a Wednesday. He has to do it on a Sunday. And before we get to politics, and we will get to a little bit of politics, of course, But what are you doing? There's no sports. You're a sports fan. You are an action sports. What are you doing?
It's we binge a lot. We binge a lot of television. That I've done. I'll be honest. I'm already bored of like going down YouTube rabbit holes of seeing buzzer beaters. MLB Network. Hey, greatest half innings of all time, and you're like, really? And after you see, oh, I remember that half inning. You're like, all right, that doesn't do it. We do have a lot of chipmunks and rabbits in our neighborhood, and we got a couple of foxes, so you could sort of gamble, I guess, on seeing who's going to live today, the chipmunk or the rabbit. And in our neighborhood, we have a huge chipmunk outbreak. By the way, this is what I do every day. I sit in my house. I wake up in the office. I do my calls out on the porch, and I watch all the chipmunks run around. And it's all because we have now rabbits. The foxes used to eat our chipmunks. And then somebody let a rabbit out a couple years ago, and, of course, we got rabbits all over our neighborhood. And guess what the fox is dying out on now?
I have to tell you this. Alone. I have to tell you that there have been rabbits in my neighborhood occasionally over 20 years. There are millions of them now, and they're fat.
Yes.
They're big, fat bunnies. And so, and you say to yourself, wait, is their only natural enemy a hawk? Because we don't have hawks in the neighborhood. We are proliferating with fat rabbits.
Well, you need one of our foxes. We've got two foxes in our neighborhood that, shall we say, they're very well fed. They do quite well in our neighborhood. And it has brought the rabbit population down. We had a huge outbreak last year. But the chipmunks are what are benefiting. I mean, the chipmunks have never felt so free because the foxes are distracted by our rabbits.
My dog looks at
sports. Sports now.
So my dog, when we're walking, my dog will look at rabbits and look at squirrels. Her instinct is to chase squirrels, which she can't because they go up a tree. She hasn't. Occasionally, if there's a rabbit in the yard, she'll go after the rabbit, and she's 0 to 60 in a second and a half. But rabbits, you know. Again, I've said this many times. If dogs could catch and kill rabbits, there'd be dead rabbits in every yard all the time. They can't. It doesn't happen. But that's and they're fat. They're giants.
I grew up with Bugs Bunny. He always got away with it. He was hard to capture, and it must be in real life too.
So, what are you going to gamble on? What are you doing? What are you waiting for? What do you think will be played and won't be played?
Well, look, I'm a Dr. Doom. My kids call me Dr. Doom because I don't know how we're doing this. I'm petrified that we're going to get a spike on July 4th, essentially over the, you know, if you look at what happened Memorial Day plus the protests.
Yes. Right,
that means sometime around the 4th of July, we're probably going to spike. And my fear is that spooks universities and goodbye college football. And that's my fear of, like, if it gets really bad around the first, right, if this spike is as bad as some fear, then that gets rid of. Because it does look like college football and NFL is pretty determined to come back in some form. I assume that we do get some football, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was only conference games when it comes to college. I mean, we'll see, but I if they start to tinker more. I mean, when I saw Alabama return, 5 players tested positive for the virus. Oh, I think Missouri had 5 players. You know, you just sit there and you're like, I don't know how you, what's going to happen when you test before a game and two of your starting offensive linemen have the virus. And then you got to sit them. First of all, you get pummeled, number one. By the way, how do you gamble on this? This is a small aside, and it's like, obviously, this is the stuff you care about. It's my understanding that at least on the college level, we won't know who tested positive for the virus until kickoff. Well, how are you supposed to gamble on that, right? Like, we're going to be back to the old days. Hey, I heard from a friend of a friend that so-and-so might have tested positive, but we don't know. Maybe no left tackle this week. And you're like, no left tackle. That's the whole game. So,
it's so interesting to me because, I mean, I obviously – I can't stand just sitting in an attic and talking about the same stories over and over and over again. So I want there to be live sports. But football, to me, you can't – everything about football is contact all the time, all week long in practice. I just don't know how they're going to stay virus-free in football. I don't know how it's possible. I am much more pessimistic about football than you. I am.
Yeah. Well, I just think that the college, I think the financials for college sports make it where there's no alternative. I mean, you know, and this goes to why I'm like a pessimist about the economy and sort of the medium term for the next 6 to 9 months, you know, 12 months. Because explain to me, I mean, I've already seen the University of Dayton got rid of golf, okay? Non-revenue sport. A couple other universities are starting to get. You're going to see, I mean, look, ask yourself. I went to GW. You went to SUNY
Binghamton. Binghamton.
Right. At what point are they going to say, man, I don't know, we're going to have to, we have to focus on spending money on improving our ability to do virtual academics. We can't afford this non-revenue sport. We can't afford this non-revenue sport. I mean, so my point is that some of these schools so desperately need the revenue, the football revenue, in order to keep the rest of their athletic budgets intact and not lose revenue sports maybe for good. So I just think in the same way that there's this, I just think there's almost like the same way the universities in general feel like they have to bring students on campus because they lose a year of that, everybody's going to wait a minute. That University of Phoenix thing isn't such a bad idea now, is it? Right? That's the big fear of sort of the entire business model falls apart. So that's why, I mean, I think that's why we have college football in the fall, that it's just sort of forced upon us. Maybe it's only the SEC and the Big Ten, right? You know, maybe they're the ones that are the most aggressive. But I just think there's too much money involved for them not to try.
And if you're the parent of a scholarship athlete on a football team, well, and your child does not get paid, you know, does not get paid for his services and becomes a laboratory rat so that the SEC can continue to play and make money, yeah, how many lawsuits does that engender?
Well, let's talk about one player. Why should Trevor Lawrence play at all?
No, I have no idea why. He's the number one pick.
We've been saying this for 2 years anyway. Some people questioning, boy, should he play a sophomore year, right? He could sit out 2 years and be the number one. At this point, in this environment, with all this uncertainty, there's, you know, I do expect quite a few players to sit. Quite a few players to sit. And, you know, again, this is all going to, what's college basketball going to look like, even if they play? Any good player now is not going to go to the college game.
No, go to the G League.
Accelerates, exactly. And I think this accelerates that trend. One thing about this pandemic, and it's been in every walk of life, but we're seeing it in sports too. If you were fragile before the pandemic, if your business model was fragile, NCAA basketball, the pandemic basically crushed you, right? Accelerated all your problems and made them right in front of your face. NCAA basketball, that problem's right in front of their face.
Would you go to a game? Let's say baseball starts.
Outside, maybe.
Would you go? You might go baseball?
Outside, maybe. Not indoors. I wouldn't go indoors. But I'd only go if baseball created a time cue from when I entered. Like, if you think about it, the only way to really do this, I don't want to be – if I knew I was going to get queued up in a line, forget it.
Right.
But if there is – one of the ideas I've seen is, you know, and you can do this now, right? On your phone, you would have a timestamp, and you've got to enter – you know, you can enter, you know, in five-minute increments as a way of trying to space people out so that you don't get queued up in line. But, you know, I certainly wouldn't be the first person to go. I'd want them to figure out how to make it so that I didn't have to get queued up in line very often. I'd be willing to go.
I'd love to go,
outdoors.
But I'd like to go alone.
Outdoors.
Yeah. All right, let me get to your real job, the job of analyzing politics in America. There's going to be an election in about an hour. I mean, I don't think people have realized, because of everything that's gone on, I don't think people have realized there's actually going to be an election, and it's not going to be postponed, and it is going to take place, although I'm sure the loser, whoever the loser is, will challenge the validity of every single vote, you know, in every single state. But what is your sense of Donald Trump right now? What is your sense of Joe Biden right now?
Is the simplest way I try to answer this question. You ever met, do you know of anybody who voted for Hillary Clinton that's voting for Donald Trump?
No.
And this is the part where I can't figure out how he wins. He has not, my point is, it's a shorthand way of saying he hasn't grown his base, right?
Right.
He's always talking to the same group of people. And it does seem over time, you know what, it's like a river. He's like a river, and his supporters are in the banks. and it's just constant erosion. And sometimes the river gets really choppy and rapidy and crazy, and it erodes faster in the moment. And then it'll calm down, and things will erode, but it's always eroding. And if you look, you look at our last poll, you look at all these polls, it's never 10 points at a time. It's one or two. Maybe one or two more points among suburban Republicans, one or two more points among college-educated white men, one or two more points. You know, you just start to see it. And it is, I mean, you know, Joe Biden, on one hand, we all look at him and you're like, boy, physically he doesn't seem like a strong candidate yet. He doesn't see, there isn't like, boy, there aren't like enthusiastic Biden supporters. Yet he's got the largest lead over a sitting incumbent president in either of our lifetimes, Tony.
You know, is that right?
Yes, at this
with,
point.
By the way, without.
Nobody's had a lead like this over an incumbent, sitting incumbent president. Nobody has had a lead like this.
Without saying a word, right? He hasn't even said anything.
Well, he hasn't said anything. I mean,
no.
Carter didn't have this lead over Ford. And, you know, there was times that Carter looked like he was a runaway in 76. You know, and then, of course, that race ended up very close at the end. I seem to think this is more like 1980. Right, where it felt close, felt competitive, felt uncertain, and then it just broke late. And
for Reagan.
People forget Reagan today, and the memory of Reagan is this, you know, larger than life person. In 1980, there were a lot of people, I'll never forget my mother going, you know, she was one of those, yeah, Carter doesn't deserve another term. I don't know about Reagan. He seems very aggressive. I don't know. Right. But I think she ended up going that way. But my point was like, you know, there were a lot of people that struggled with the Reagan choice, and they were okay after the fact, but it was more of a, I'm voting out Carter, right? I'm not voting for Reagan, I'm voting out Carter. And I think that's where we're headed here, that it's possible this breaks late, and it's just a whole bunch of people that may only vote for Biden once in their lifetime, may only vote Democrat once in their lifetime, but it may be this time.
Do you, like you're in this, you have to watch this every day, you have to talk mm-hmm. about it every day. Does it feel to you like a sea change? Does it feel to you like this is lasting, that there is going to be an enormous change in the country and an acceptance that we are now on a new path?
On race, I want to believe that. I don't know yet. I don't know if this is the debate. In fact, my colleague and I, who we write a morning newsletter on politics every morning, First Street, and we had this: is this going to be like gay marriage that just it flipped and everybody's, yep, we're all in.
Yeah, yes.
That's, or is this going to be like what we saw after the Parkland shooting, where for about a week it looked like everybody wanted to do something, and then all of a sudden politics got in the way, and you're like, we're not there yet, right? We're not whatever it was, you know. You get closer on guns, but you're not there yet, right? There hasn't been the sea change. So I don't know on urban politics. I will say this. To see the Republican Party this morning, for the most part, separate Trump out of here a minute, they're desperate to do some police reform with the Democrats. The fact that the Democratic bill that's already out there, you know, normally if the Democrats pass a bill on their own, right, they put out a proposal, it doesn't have bipartisan support, it automatically starts getting trashed by Republicans. Oh, party line. You're not hearing that. There aren't things being offered in there that Republicans think that they can't support, or at least support the concept of it. So there is a deal to be done. I think at the end of the day, it's going to depend on two things. One is Trump. And how much does he want it, or does he decide to just blow it up on his own, which he can in any moment with one tweet, kind of almost what he did yesterday? Or do Democrats not want to give the Republicans cover and not want to help out? You know, vulnerable Republicans would like to be on the side of police reform in North Carolina and Colorado and Arizona. So that's the one thing that could end this. But the bigger picture, I mean, look, the big sea change is a majority of white Americans now believe there's systemic racism.
Yes.
Okay. That is what didn't change for decades. You had a majority of the country that believed it, but not a majority of white America. Now you have a majority of white America, and that's the sea change. I don't know what sustaining itself looks like in the next 3 months, but it does feel like long term this is, you know, that the saying, the arc of we have a long arc of history, but it bends towards justice. It's like, oh, we're rounding the bend on this one. But I still think, you know, I'm cautiously optimistic. There's still a chance this, you know, a week later, it looks like a gun debate.
I'm always sort of cautioned by the fact that on this issue, I am more optimistic than Wilbon. Wilbon always says to me, I hope you're right, but I don't think so.
Didn't you find that during 08? I found that during the 08 campaign. African-American colleagues and friends of mine were much more pessimistic about the country electing Obama than white folks. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Interesting. Thank you, Chuck. Let's talk under better circumstances when there's sports we can gamble on. Thank you, Chuck.
I would love that. Thanks, Tony. Stay safe.
Chuck
Stay
Todd,
healthy.
Boys and girls. It's wonderful to talk to him. We will take a break. Jeannie McManus will join us when we return. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Policy Genius ad. With everything going on right now, a lot of people are asking if it's even possible to buy life insurance at all. And the short answer is yes. You can buy life insurance during a pandemic. And if you have loved ones, depending on your income, you probably should. As an insurance marketplace, Policy Genius is in contact with the life insurance companies on their platform every day. They're keeping track of all the changes in the market so you don't have to, which means they can get you covered quickly and for the best price. Here's how it works. Policy Genius compares quotes from the top life insurance companies in one place. It takes just a few minutes to compare quotes from the top insurers to find your best price. This doesn't just save a lot of legwork. You could save $1,500 or more by using Policy Genius to compare life insurance policies. Once you apply, the Policy Genius team will handle all the paperwork and red tape for free. So if you hit any speed bumps during the application process, they'll be there to take care of everything. So if you're one of the many people looking to buy life insurance right now, but you're not sure where to start, head to policygenius.com. Policy Genius will find you the best rate and handle the process completely. They'll get you and your family protected and hopefully give you one less thing to worry about. I'll spell it for you. PolicyGenius. Policy Genius.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Follow the highway.
Once again, this is Val McCallum. Val McCallum is the lead guitarist for Jackson Browne and the lead guitarist for Bonnie Raitt and tours all the time. Val McCallum, Jeannie will love this, is the son of David McCallum, the British actor. The Man from U.N.C.L.E. And his mother is Jill Ireland. And Jill Ireland, after that marriage broke up, Jill Ireland married Charles Bronson. And this song, Charlie's Cole, is for Charles Bronson, who was Val McCallum's stepdad. This is as close to sort of royalty as we're getting on this show. Val McCallum, you know,
and we are digging deep in the trivia drawer, I might add.
It's really nice. Yes. I mean, if for those people who don't know the television show, The Man from U.N.C.L.E. with Robert Vaughn and David McCallum, it was wonderful. Remember, Jeannie, he played Ilya Kuryakin.
Yes. Yes. He had that kind of bowl cut blonde hair.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. And
very handsome.
Yeah, he was a great-looking guy, and he played, although I think he's Scottish, he played, you know, sort of an Eastern European, almost Russian kind of guy, right, in The Man from U.N.C.L.E.?
Right.
That's what I remember.
Sort of like a precursor to maybe Mission Impossible.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I mean, it was a really good show,
yeah.
The Man from U.N.C.L.E. It was an NBC show, if I remember correctly, and it was a really good show. But you got to go back at least 50 years, maybe more.
I know maybe. I watched it on a black and white television.
Yeah, so that's a long time ago. What are you doing? Keep us updated with you. The last time we talked, you were trying to find new routes to walk. You were concerned that Connecticut Avenue was too crowded and you were branching off.
I have been doing that, although I did walk down Connecticut Avenue yesterday because I had to get something at the CVS, and as I was walking back at Connecticut and Macomb on Connecticut Avenue, a manhole cover blew up out of the street.
Really?
And I thought, okay, so we have a pandemic and we have protesting nationwide, and now the manhole covers are exploding. Why not?
So it blew straight up into the, how high did it go? Is it like a geyser?
It blew gosh, I would say 7 or 8 feet. It kind of spun, and then it landed back in the hole, but at an angle, so it was sticking up like a shield.
Right, right.
So there was no sign of construction or any work going on in Connecticut Avenue, but all of a sudden this guy comes running down from Macomb Street. Had heard the boom. I mean, it was a boom, and I was right across the street from it. If I had been on that side of the street, it would have been scary. He comes running down and very smartly immediately starts to direct traffic, because if a car had driven into that, I mean, the axle would have been broken in a second. So he very, very smartly starts to redirect traffic. And then as soon as the light turns red and that traffic stops, he ran up Macomb Street and got 2 orange cones. So I'm thinking he must have been part of some work crew on Macomb Street, and that maybe just connecting the dots here, something they were doing on Macomb Street precipitated a manhole explosion on Connecticut Avenue.
So let me be clear about this. This was not on the sidewalk. This was on the thoroughfare, on the street itself?
Yes, on the second lane away from the sidewalk.
Well, but it could have fallen back down and crushed a car.
I mean, what if you've been driving over it at that minute?
That's tough for you. That's a bad look if it smashes right in the bottom of your car and through the driver's seat.
Well,
how was the force on it? Like, was it really forceful?
Yes, it was. It wasn't just popping up. I mean, it launched. It launched. And then landed back down in the hole, but like at I'm bad in geometry, like a 135-degree angle maybe? I don't know.
Those things are heavy. They'll crush you.
Yes. I thought that perhaps it was an omen, and so I came home and stayed inside for the rest of the day. I didn't do any more walking.
That's probably the right way to go, although from now on I might avoid Connecticut Avenue and try to walk on a smaller street. But every street has manhole covers. Well, and there's a city down there. There's like, under the street is a lot of stuff. And then there, you know, there could be people living there. You don't know.
There are trolls down there for sure, and alligators.
You don't know. So Jeannie came over to the house the other day to get some food from the Roberto Dona thing that I've talked about. And by the way, some listeners to the show have signed up, which is really nice. I'm sure that's a really good thing. And you saw that I had lost weight, and you did. You had a look of horror on your face, which scared me.
I had a look of horror when you told me how much you had lost.
You wouldn't have known?
May I say that number?
Yes.
Okay. You told me that you had lost 40 pounds.
Oh, no, I didn't lose 40 pounds.
Over 20 years.
You know, I didn't lose 40 pounds. But I've lost about 12 to 15 in the last few months. I don't know how. I'm eating. I mean, I'm, you know, maybe I'm sick, but I don't appear to be sick. I don't feel sick.
I'm
eating.
Great. You look great. But I must say, you know, I came for my weekly food basket, which was delicious.
We're a food bank here. Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
And Michael, thank you for the yeast. And I went home and I ate the white ragu, delicious white ragu lasagna.
Yep.
And I thought, how is Tony eating this and losing weight? And I thought, well, you must have a tapeworm. I mean, I don't want to alarm you. I know you're not the kind of person who worries about your health. But I thought, you must have a tapeworm.
I'm eating at night. I'm eating full dinners, and I'm happy to eat them. I'm not eating during the day. Michael has theories on this.
No, I don't think any of us are aware as to how many calories you eat every day at lunch at PTI, and then you eat candy nonstop.
A lot of candy.
So now you're down to one meal and one snack, which is ice cream over the sink.
Yeah, so I'm not, yeah. But do you like the food? The Roberto Dona food is really good.
Oh yeah, it was really good, and there was polenta, and there were a couple of soups that I have only eaten one of the soups. It was labeled CH Spring Soup, so I think that was chive spring soup because it was redolent of chives.
Did you like it?
It was very good.
One of the reasons I think I'm losing weight, honestly, is I am a big bread eater.
Yes.
Yeah. And nothing, and I don't have any bread. You know, if I go out to eat, I eat a lot of bread. I tend to eat a lot of bread, and I haven't been doing that. I've had a bagel, you know, during the day from Bethesda Bagels, but I'm really a big bread and butter eater, and I don't have that. One of the things that was delivered to me at PTI was soup with bread every single day. And I just, most of the time, just ate the bread. It was really good bread.
Next time I come for my food basket, I'll bring you a loaf of my bread.
Yeah, your homemade bread. That would be great.
Yeah.
That would be great. I don't know how you feel about this, and I think about this, that so much of my social engagements in my life have either been going to play golf or going to sit and eat at a restaurant. And I'm not anxious at all to go to a restaurant. I'm really not. I know a lot of people are. Are you? I'm not.
Not at all. And I loved restaurants as much for the food as just for meeting my friends there, you know, sitting together, having a glass of wine, sharing a meal. But this is what I have started to do, and I think this is safe. I go to my friend Diane. She has this beautiful yard. We sit far apart from each other on beach towels. And Sunday, her daughter went down to Capital Crab and bought a dozen really delicious crabs. And then the daughter stood in the yard and threw us crabs.
As if you were a seal?
Like we were a seal. So we didn't have any contact except with the crabs.
Right.
And just when we wanted another one, she'd go over to the bag, get us a crab, and throw it at us. And so that was as close.
But wait, did you like a seal? Did you clap?
Did you bring a baseball mitt?
Yeah.
We barked at her. That's for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Bring us another crab. And then we drank some beers. We each had our own beers, so you know we weren't touching each other's beer bottles or anything. So, you know, we worked that out as best we could. I thought it was rather ingenious of us.
I see people. I see houses as I walk the dog. I see houses where there are chairs set up in front yards, and they are distanced.
Yep.
You know, now that doesn't mean that people don't stand right next to each other when they're not sitting on the chairs, but the chairs at least appear to be within the framework of distance.
I've seen that too, and I know we're of mixed opinions on fire pits in this group, but I've seen some assembled around a fire pit, and I must say it looks quite nice.
Yeah, I'm not a fire pit person.
Yeah, but you have sat around one.
I have in my life, and it's been pleasant. It's been pleasant. Is there stuff that you thought you would miss that you don't miss at all? Is there any like moments of reflection where you go, "Gee, you know, I don't really care about this," and I thought I might.
I miss sort of stupid obligations that weren't really obligations. I don't miss those. Rather, I should say, that's one thing I'm grateful I don't have, is this kind of social pressure to go someplace or be someplace that I went to half-heartedly. So I'm kind of relieved not to have that. But I miss the crush of humanity, even for all of its negative aspects. I mean, put me on the red line and have some millennial whack me in the head with his backpack. You know, I miss just getting on the red line and going down to a museum. I miss living an urban existence.
I get that. I, as a total task-oriented person, I've had to invent tasks for myself because I've found out that there's a lot of things that I did on a regular basis that I didn't really have to do. You know, I did them because they defined my life, and I don't have them anymore. And I'd like to, you know, I was one of those people, I'd get up real early, take care of the dog. I'd go to the supermarket by 7:30 in the morning because there's hardly anybody there. And I haven't been doing that. Of course, I do miss, particularly on weekends, watching sports. I do. I imagine you do too. I mean, this would be the middle of baseball season. I'd watch every day. I miss that.
I know. I do miss that. But let me tell you, I mean, I'm like you. I'm a task-oriented person. Also, always got up early. I mean, I would get up, you know, the crack of dawn to go swimming and then come back and do a million things. But here is one thing that I have done
that relieves me of a certain task. I have bought a robot vacuum cleaner. It is the greatest invention since the remote control.
Really?
It goes under the bed. It goes under the couch. It just goes off on its own. And you don't have to give it instructions. It just goes off on its own, and it vacuums the entire place. And
how does it know to do that? How does it know?
It goes back to home base. It knows when it's run out of energy and trots on back to home base to recharge.
I don't know. I mean, are you telling me it goes under the bed and it gets everything under the bed, or it just gets some things and says, she's probably thinking I'm doing the whole deal here. I'm just going back and forth in the same line.
Well, no, but if you feel like it hasn't done the whole deal, like sometimes I just lock it in my bedroom and say, you just stay in there, Buster. And by the way, it is a him. I've made sure it's a him. I say, you just go in there, Buster, and clean everything up, and I'll come and get you when I think that you're done. And sometimes I find him just sort of listless on the carpet, waiting for me to come and take him back to home base.
Well, it seems a little bit more useful than a dog. I don't know.
And
that
it's
I would
a great
trust
babysitter for a certain 11-month-old little boy.
Oh, do you have one of these?
So as soon as my sister-in-law left town, we went to her apartment, took this, and we sequestered into rooms as well, because it's always learning and mapping the floor. But the hammer loves pushing the on button, and then he just chases it around.
Is that right?
He tries to ride it.
Is it? That's wonderful. I don't even know. I don't know anything about it. What do they cost? Are they hundreds? Are they thousands? Are they $50?
This was a cheap one. It was a couple $100s. Well, relatively cheap, I guess. But you
right.
know, there's some that are much more expensive. But this is, you know, modestly priced one. Of course, I don't have as many square feet as you do, but it would be great for example, dog hair.
What if they bump into something? You know, I mean, do they stop?
They bounce off.
Yeah.
They bounce off?
Yeah.
And they don't scratch the furniture legs or anything. They have, like, these little brushes that go out from the side, and they know when they're getting too near something.
Like whiskers for a dog?
They skirt around. By the way, what a warm welcome Chessie gave me yesterday.
Chessie's a great dog. She has a bark that everyone gets annoyed with, but it's a bark that says, play with me.
Yes,
that's all it is, play with me.
I think so. She wanted to dance with me, maybe. Because,
yeah, she likes you.
Yeah.
She's a girl. She likes other girls.
Yeah.
That's how it works. All right, it's great to talk with you. Enjoy the food. We'll give you more.
Okay, take care.
But Gene McManus, boys and girls, we will take a break. We will come back with email and a jingle. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
All right, we're camping. Long summer camping, do you? We're camping.
Brilliant. Lyrics by Byron Cotter, Joe Harrow with the vocal. Remember Czarnecki's Lumberyard? How do you remember Tinklepaw's Texaco Station in Hancock, New York? How do you remember that? It's just brilliant. Just so wonderful. All right. That'll do it for us today. Before we get to the mailbag, let me remind you I'll be hosting Hullabaloo this Friday with musical guests Clarence Frogman, Henry the Teddy Bears, and the Exciters. Thanks to our guests today, Steve Sands of the Golf Channel, Meet the Press host Chuck Todd, our very own Gene McManus. Thanks to our sponsors, Policy Genius and Vincero. And remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Radio.com. If you get the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. Nigel has a couple of announcements.
Yes. First of all, we'd like to thank the folks at Bethesda Bagels. They give us our bagels every time we do the show. We love them. You will as well. Go to BethesdaBagels.com. They've got several locations. They're open every day from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. Also, we want a very special shout out to Arison Todd, who is having his virtual bar mitzvah today. I guess they're doing it through Zoom. So very special day for Arison. We wish him all the best. And
I hope we can get a link to that. We would really like to get a link to that so that we can, you know, crash the bar mitzvah party. Go ahead.
Absolutely. Yes, and you're right, David McCallum, in fact, from Glasgow. Yeah. So you had that right.
From Adam Gerwich, who's a good friend of Gary Braun's, he wanted to point this out, that I gave birthday shout-outs on PTI the other day to John Carlos and Tommy Smith, and he wanted to make us aware that Peter Norman, who finished second in the 200 in 1968 in Mexico City, would have been 78 on June the 15th. His story, he was raised by parents who were members of the Salvation Army, and he was a champion of social justice and equality and spent the majority of his life paying an individual price for protesting injustice. And that's why Adam sent this particular email. This is the kicker to it. Tommy Smith and John Carlos gave eulogies and were pallbearers at Peter Norman's funeral. That's really, that's friendships that last a lifetime. From Steve the Sycophant, your listeners' emails about their milk and bread delivery men took me back to the early 1950s, when the highlight of my day was the visit of our milkman, Al. Our house was at the end of his route, and if we were playing catch, he'd always throw a few with us. This was a biggie because he had played professional baseball and would tell a few stories about playing in the minor leagues one year with Whitey Ford, I believe in a Class C league. Once, in all innocence, I asked why he didn't stay in baseball and pitch for the Yankees. He just smiled and said I wasn't good enough. Thanks to Al, I became a Yankee fan, that is, until the 1970s when the infamous Mr. Steinbrenner took over. I'm sure Al is long gone, but one bit of his advice has stayed with me. When at bat, never assume you're getting a curve. If you lean in and it's a fastball inside, your ribs will be sore for a week. Philosophy to treasure. From Sean Bellamy, wanted to let you know that my milkman's name was John Taphorn in Humboldt, Saskatchewan, Canada. Thanks. From John Donnelly in Enfield, New Hampshire, I hear you and Michael have been invited up to Cabot Cove to play around with Angelo Lansbury and Tom Bosley. Enjoy the golf, but don't dawdle afterwards. As everyone knows, the Cove has the highest murder rate per capita in North America. From Albert Chan in Aurora, Ontario, I'm just catching up on some earlier episodes of the podcast. On the May 13th show, you mentioned how it is a heartwarming experience when you get a call or a text from someone you don't expect during these challenging times. This is absolutely true because it made me so happy when Lewis Black recently reached out to me and invited me to play golf with him at Pinehurst. Yep. I'm not sure if his mom will be riding in the same cart as me due to social distancing protocols. I hope everybody remains safe. From Stan Fleming in Ellicott City, Maryland. Let's talk Nova Scotia. In 2004, we stayed at the Celtic Lodge on Cape Breton and played the Highland Links Golf Course. Spectacular, scenic, and challenging. You should go. From Andrew, who writes, thank you so much for reading my email on the air earlier, as well as that of my fellow Nova Scotian. Unfortunately, I've discovered a private citizen cannot ship wine to the United States. Cannot do it legally anyway, so I've copied every winery in Nova Scotia I could think of in hopes of finding a wine-producing little to get you that case I promised. Wineries of Nova Scotia, here's your chance to go head-to-head with the Willamette Valley and reach tens of thousands of new customers. And Andrew Kent is the director of developments, I guess, for, I don't know, for something to do with wine, I guess, in Nova Scotia. Orrin Hirsch in Washington, D.C., in reference to Michael's wondering about how a Zoom bar mitzvah might work, we did a Zoom bris for my son last week. Ooh, think about that for a moment. Okay, the truth is we let the moil into our home and he, my wife, and I all wore masks, but the rest of our guests had to join via Zoom. I would never do that. Definitely not how we were expecting to welcome our little one to the covenant, to say the least. I look forward to introducing Johan, 7 pounds, 9.5 ounces, and a sneaky long 21 inches at birth to the pod, though I must admit, his mother, the person to whom I'm related by marriage, would probably prefer otherwise. How long was the baby boy Bootsy?
22 and a half.
Okay, so that's big, right? So we have all these mails about... I'll just read one more. This is a camp thing from Donnie Singer in Columbia, Maryland. Your camp conversation on Monday brought back many memories of my time at Camp Airy in Thurmont, Maryland. You went to Camp Airy, didn't you, once, 1 year, and you hated it? You hated it. You sent us postcards and saying you'd kill yourself. Yeah.
Right.
North on 270, north on 15, exit onto Route 550 north, left into Camp Area and up the hill to the bunkhouses. I spent 7 summers there as a camper and 3 as a counselor. We had our own set of hangouts for time off similar to yours. Rocky's Pizza had a Camp Airy special that gave us a discount on their New York-style pizza. The camp is located in the Catoctin Mountains of North Frederick, north of Frederick, Maryland, close to Camp David. I've driven there a lot of times. Legend has it that the camp hike master once took a group of campers a little too close to Camp David and had a visit from Marines and Secret Service agents. Last year, my son attended his first summer at Camp Airy. This year, my daughter is attending Camp Louise, where Elizabeth went, the sister camp. All this is now up in the air due to COVID-19, but as of today, and this was a month ago, though, camp has not yet been canceled. Thank you for the camp memories over the years, which make me remember my time in the Catoctin Mountains. You go past Mount St. Mary's. It's probably about 20 minutes north of Mount St. Mary's in Emmitsburg, Maryland.
Sure. Thanks for making me relive this.
You were not happy. If you're out on your bike tonight.
You then put it in the post.
Yeah. I'm sorry. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, do wear white.
Honestly, what the f*** are we doing here?
One, two, three.
Who'd have thought in the shape I'm in, I could start all over again after I walk the line and I'm dangling from the end? Who'd have thought I could find a dream in the Lexington Queen? Life in the underground is lost and never found, and she walks in. Tokyo girl, and life begins. Tokyo girl, changed, I'm breathing. Who'd have thought I'd find the one under a blood red sun? This rising tide pulling me back home. She held my heavy head. I looked up and she kissed my face. Tears of mercy and grace washing away pain, falling down like holy rain on her skin. Tokyo girl, life begins. Tokyo girl, and in her eyes of green, my blue world changed. I'm breathing. Of Scootown,
Digging cold.